Hello, and thank you for joining us and listening to the Web Talk Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana, his faithful gal sidekick.
Say, have you ever been surfing around the net and get caught in a web of flash? A multimedia presentation that makes you just want to find the skip intro button? Well, some usability folks say that flash is 99% bad. We say you should blame uninformed flash designers for excesses, not the technology. Today we'll hear from authors of a brand new Flash usability book called Skip Intro, Macromedia's Flash Usability and Interface Design.
I really wanted to address the people going around saying Flash is bad, you can't make intuitive websites. That's a little bit of a head in the sand. Flash is here to stay. You can complain about it, or you can go about trying to make the situation better and educating developers into how to make usable websites, and how to make it intuitive, and how to make really great objects out there.
Also today, we're jumping into the world of website hosting. We'll hear from the CEO of a web server colocation facility. If you ever plan on owning a website, well, you're going to have it hosted somewhere. We're talking with Rick Shanaman, who's the CEO of OpticFusion.net.
I've seen the bandwidth price drop as the folks have become more competitive to look for customers. But what we've had here is we've had a number of these people who provide the connectivity. They've gone out of business. So the lack of competition in the market has really stopped that. In fact, I was reading an article the other day that said that we've seen the bottom of the bandwidth pricing.
And all that ahead here on WebTalk Guys Radio.
Well, what an exciting week we've had around here in the WebTalk Guys studio. Thanks to you. We've seen a ton of audio being streamed from our servers. And thanks to you who signed up for our newsletter recently. Last week, we sent to our loyal newsletter subscribers the audio streams of the top 10 conversations the WebTalk Guys have broadcast from all those interesting characters and dot-com movers and shakers over the past 3 years. And if you didn't get that email and want it, just drop me a line at dana@webtalkguys.com.
The WebTalk Guys have been named by PC World Magazine as one of the best of today's web. Go online at pcworld.com. We're also listed there as kind of a hidden gem, but we're not a hidden gem to you because you obviously are listening today. And thank you for supporting us and listening. See, in case you're wondering, WebTalk Guys can be heard at CNET Radio in San Francisco or at radio.com or on the XM Satellite Radio Network or streaming from webtalkguys.com. We're also available over your telephone through the mobile broadcasting network. Go ahead and check out mymbn.com.
And since this show is the place to hear about new websites and the future of the internet and technology trends, I have a new streaming show I want to give a standing ovation to. A shout out to talkingolf.com. That's talking, TalkinGolf. .com. It's direct from Sydney, Australia, and the host, Rod Morey, and I have been doing the email thing, Rob. He's a real well-informed golf guy, and he does great interviews on the game and puts together a really entertaining show, and I just enjoyed it. Rod generously gave WebTalk Guys some great webcasting ideas that I'm really grateful for, so thank you, Rod. You're one terrific guy, and you have that great Aussie accent. So check out www.talkingolf.com.
Yeah, go check them out down under. Hey, you know, Dana, it's all about collaboration on the web, just like you and talkinggolf.com. We have a minute or two extra here before we launch into our conversations with the Skip Intro guys. And collaboration got me thinking about blogs.
Blogs?
And their weblogs is what they're officially called on the internet. And they've grown into a way to collaborate in a large way with a group of people online. It's a way to create content that flows between people and information about different things that are going on in the real world.
You know, they say blogs are like personal diaries, which I never thought was that compelling. But there's some scenarios where it can be really cutting edge to have a blog going.
And there's a lot of people within the online space that are thinking that old-time journalists better look out because the readers are actually going to be taking over the news broadcasts out there in the future, I think, if this continues to grow.
Well, the scenario I was alluding to was that if you can go to a conference, for instance, and maybe there's a speaker speaking and people in the audience with their laptops and handhelds actually blogging at that moment, putting in information from the speaker.
Yeah.
It's being read live.
Or taking digital photographs and then uploading them up to web servers and making them available. And you can really instantly create collaboration and communication about all sorts of types of live events out there that it's even much more real-time than even the current news broadcasts out there.
Yeah, it's blurring the line, and I think the general public may be doing it better than some journalists. I don't know, but they're not getting paid for it.
Exactly. It's a freebie effort, but that's what the internet's all about, and that's what it does well. And this is just a reflection of the power of the internet. So go check out blogger.com, and you can read all about the growing trend of blogging. Maybe you can even get your own blogging site going.
Maybe we should.
I think we should.
Well, we do need to take a quick break, Rob, but stay connected, because in seconds we'll bring you that conversation with Michelangelo and Duncan, the authors of Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability, and Interface Design.
You don't want to miss that. These are a couple of fun guys. This is WebTalk Guys Radio.
One world. One web, one show that matters. The Web Talk Guys.
You're back listening to Web Talk Guys Radio, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana. You know, everyone has an opinion about Flash, and at least I find the chances of that opinion changing and evolving is connected to the last website you've seen that uses Flash. Flash, by the way, is made by Macromedia. It's an application that helps you create the fast-loading multimedia you see on some websites. And Macromedia themselves say that Flash is the solution for producing and delivering high-impact websites.
Yes, and some Flash opponents say it's also a solution for making your website highly annoying and downright unusable.
But you see, I think that's just prejudice, because condemning an entire creative application because a few designers just didn't do their usability homework, Rob, I think Flash is cool, and uninformed designers should be blamed for that excess, not the technology itself.
Yeah, the proper use of Flash has been a hotly debated topic between rich media evangelists and usability experts. Even Jacob Nielsen threw down the gauntlet when he said Flash is 99% bad. But since then, Macromedia has added resources relating to usability and accessibility. We decided to take a closer look at what we can do to make Flash more user-friendly. And we invited two authors of a new book on the subject to join us today. Michelangelo Caprero and Duncan McAllister, both usability developers and co-authors of the book Skip Intro, Macromedia's Flash Usability and Interface Design. Michelangelo has designed user experiences for TV, websites, CD-ROMs, and handheld devices. He is also a visual experience designer at PalmSource and founded CreativeEngine.com and has done projects for IBM, Disney, Fox, and the Amnesty International organization.
And Duncan McAllister's design company is BreatheDesign.com. He's created projects for Lincoln Mercury, and he's worked on the Ally McBeal website when he was with Creative Engine with Michelangelo. And Duncan won the 2001 Macromedia People's Choice Award.
The book site is at www.skip-intro.org. Duncan and Michelangelo, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Let's talk about your book a little bit and kind of what your purpose of writing the book was. I've definitely got the impression that you guys are trying to show that there is a design piece that fits with website usability. And I know there's a lot of usability consultants, and we've had them on our show too, that say don't use Flash because it's not easy and intuitive for people to use. But it sounds like what your book is trying to address is trying to bridge that gap of the design and the usability aspects. Can you guys talk about that a little bit? I don't know who wants to go first.
Duncan, go ahead.
Okay. I'll just take a little piece of that. You know, absolutely. We're definitely trying to bridge that gap. It's really just about tools we're talking about here. And any tool you have, if you put time and effort into it, you can make something usable. It's really about the person creating and not the tool so much itself. I really wanted to address the people going around saying Flash is bad and you can't make intuitive websites. That's a little bit of a kind of head in the sand. Flash is here to stay. You can complain about it, or you can go about trying to make the situation better and educating developers into how to make usable websites and how to make it intuitive and how to make really great objects out there. And that's sort of the tact we're taking, I think, is you can do good things with it.
Should a user or a designer look at a Flash piece as something that should be just a one little piece of a website, or are you guys looking at it from the perspective that the whole site should be designed using the Flash technology?
Right now, there's a good mixture of that on the web, and I think right now we have sites that maybe have a little bit of Flash on their site, but are primarily like plain old HTML page. Other sites are all built in Flash. It just really depends on what the purpose of the content is. For example, like some movie websites, I would say, yeah, go ahead and make a full-screen Flash experience, because you kind of want to extend that on multimedia interactive experience. You know, on a different kind of project, you might want Flash to be used to demonstrate what clothes might look like on a person, and Flash may make that really easy to mm-hmm. test out different styles or something.
Well, you know, you're talking about the different kind of ways you can use Flash on a website, and it seems like the first way it was used, and still is, I suppose, is sort of what the title of your book is playing off of, which is an intro, and you have a book called Skip Intro. Is there a place still for that, or do people even have patience to repeatedly see a 15-second movie before being admitted into the site?
Well, I think putting them at the front of the site is definitely not an acceptable idea really anymore. It's outdated and outmoded. It was really cool for a long time because we were mid-90s. We were stuck with these HTML pages that had no animation and no interactivity. And then all of a sudden, Flash showed up on the scene, and you could do really incredible things with it. And everybody just jumped on the bandwagon and pumping out these neat-looking animations. We're past that now. I definitely think there's a place for animated movies still. I just don't think there's a place for them necessarily in commercial websites.
I think the idea of an intro kind of needs to evolve a bit. When it comes down to it, people still want intros at the front of their site because they think people will hit it, they'll see the spectacular animation, and then they're going to want to buy, you know, pepper shakers that you might be selling.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to is that people want to have something exciting that draws attention to their website. And an intro seems like the logical solution, but it may not be in its current form. And some of the stuff that Duncan and I have talked about are things, you know, like, having the intro not actually block entry to the site. I've seen mm-hmm. some great websites where that the website will actually load and the menu items and everything will load, and then they'll play a little animation, you know, kind of framed somewhere, but it doesn't really stop the user from entering into the site to get to where they want, so it doesn't actually delay them. And I recently read some statistic that said, you know, like 80 to 90% of people who see a skip intro button on an intro will click it. They're not very compelling right now.
We're taking a quick break, but we're having a conversation with Michelangelo Capraro and Duncan McAllister. They're the authors of a new book called Skip Intro. More in a second. This is Web Talk Guys Radio. Hey, do you love the internet and media? Are you interested in implementing streaming media into your business? Or maybe you just want to create your own entertainment empire? Well, the WebTalk guys are offering a one-day hands-on workshop covering everything about streaming audio and video and how you can encode using real audio and video, Windows Media, and MP3. You'll learn all the steps from concept to production to the final webcast, and you can turn it all into your own radio show or a way to market your expertise on the internet or take your business online. This one-day workshop on streaming media production is Tuesday, January 14, from 9 to 4. The workshop is held at the Tacoma Community College's Downtown Center in Tacoma, Washington. You can get more information right at our WebTalkEyes website at webtalkeyes.com/workshop. And keep this in mind, two more one-day workshops from the WebTalkEyes are coming up very soon. We're going to be teaching a website usability techniques workshop on February 11 and a website marketing and promotions one-day workshop on March 18. Remember, more information at webtalkeyes.com/workshop. We'd love to meet you and see you there.
You're back and connected with the WebTalkEyes radio show.
And with us right now are the two authors of Skip Intro, a book on Macromedia Flash usability. Both Duncan McAllister and Michelangelo Capraro are joining us for a conversation about how to use Flash design in a good way.
Let's talk about the future of Flash and its different uses. Now, I've seen in the past people have started to use Flash pieces for playing movies. You know, and I see that there's more of that happening. You know, the technology's improving, the animation's a lot faster, and the sound quality is terrific. Can you guys talk about how Flash is going to be used for multimedia delivery here in the future? And are we going to see a new streaming media format with this?
Yeah, I think right now, with people getting better connectivity, in the home and in general, I think we're just going to start to see bigger things happening and more, interactive and animated kind of experience. With the latest Flash, there's the new video format that it has that allows you to do even more than you could before. So I think before, a lot of people were just making, you know, little animations or having a lot of JPEG frames in their Flash movie. Now, you know, there's special handling of video in Flash. Yeah, I think in the future we'll just see get bigger and better and more interactive and crazy. But at the same time, I think more people are going to start to realize that it can really improve their website.
Flash can also be used to almost duplicate somewhat some of the same features that a regular traditional HTML site has as well, but adds some kind of dynamic features to it. You see sites moving towards a traditional website design with like form tables and those kind of things added to the site that looks like a regular HTML page, but it's really driven by Flash.
I think so. I think actually the website we're currently working on for this, the Skip Intro site, is very similar to that in a lot of ways. There's also sort of fun interactive things that don't really bar the way of getting into the content at all. It enhances the experience and creates a more fun, engaging place for the user to go. But it is definitely more HTML-like than you would expect from sort of a traditional Flash website, I think.
Well, and also Flash is being used more for online advertising now, too. Are you guys working with any of those type of projects?
It seems to be very successful. In the statistics I've read, they're getting much better click-throughs than GIF banner ads because it doesn't the user to leave the site. They can get, you know, information that they need while they're still on the page that they're looking at and without going to some other site and losing where they were. So that's a really nice feature of Flash.
Yeah, some of the advertisements I'm blown away by because I go to a website and all of a sudden like a person will pop out of the side of my screen and walk across the webpage and I'm like, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And then they try to sell me something and I go, I get it.
That is a really cool factor. I like a car driving across your screen and I haven't gotten annoyed with it yet, so.
Yeah, well, I think as long as people don't start abusing it and it shows up everywhere and it is kind of something that shows up every once in a while, like, you know, sort of like Batgirl in the old Batman episode, where it's unique thing.
Well, that wouldn't be bad.
It's not going to get too annoying as long as it's used in an intelligent way and people don't start throwing it everywhere. Unfortunately, I think they will and we'll all hate it with you.
So let's just talk about the book a moment here, Skip Intro. You know, it does have techniques and code samples and case studies is kind of the guts of the book. Explain how your book is sort of laid out and how you teach the person that's reading it about usability.
One of the goals when we started writing the book was to make a book that didn't kind of scare off the Flash designers. I think a lot of the usability gurus out there have kind of bashed Flash, and I think Flash designers, you know, they're a little sensitive about that, so they kind of shy away from those people and perhaps buying their books. And what we tried to do was just really say, okay, well, we really want to introduce the community or at least help the community learn more about usability and why we need to concentrate on it and think about our user. But part of that and part of what, you know, Flash developers love is it's dealing with all sorts of aspects of a project like code and the visual design and dealing with, you know, the interaction design. So we tried to put that all in the book so that, you know, it really did fit kind of the makeup of who the Flash designer is and appeal to them.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Michelangelo Capraro and Duncan McAllister, both authors of a new book that just came out called Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability and Interface Design. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
Web Talk Guys, downloading.
Web Talk Guys, buffering.
You're still connected to the Web Talk Guys radio show. I'm Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana's here.
And we're learning why Flash doesn't have to be a dirty word when you talk about usability with authors of the book Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability and Interface Design. Authors Michelangelo and Duncan are here talking with us right now.
So who was the target audience for your book? It seems to have a lot of code in it, and it seems to be very, very at a very high level. Is that who you're going after, is the high-level developer out there?
Well, actually, I think the code is probably the least important bit in the book altogether. I mean, I think one of the things we try and say, and I'm not sure if it came across quite as well as it should in the book, but you know, the code that we wrote could probably be written a dozen different ways and accomplish the exact same goal. And it's probably aimed at the more of an intermediate advanced user. Definitely not a beginner book because we don't go into some fairly advanced topics. But the beginners can still get a lot out of it in just seeing why we go into such detail and depth with the code. It's because we have to provide a good user experience. You know, if you look at, for instance, the tooltips, or I guess the tooltips is a good one to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fairly huge bit of code in there. I mean, it's 400 or 500 lines, I think, something like that. But you could easily throw together a tooltip engine that would be, you know, 20 or 30 lines of code. But it doesn't take into account all of the things you need to take into account when building something like that for a user. You know, it's not going to appear off the stage if the tooltip object is too close to the edge of the screen, and it's you know, not going to disappear the right way, and it's you know, not going to appear the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that. The beginner from, or beginning Flash author or developer would get something from it in reading the user case studies and seeing why that detail needs to be put into the code, I think.
A lot of usability people say 99% of Flash is bad, and of course you're trying to bridge that gap. But you have a chapter that I was found interesting, Bad Flashers Anonymous, you call it. can you, I mean, do you dare tell us some specific sites, maybe even URLs, of really bad examples of Flash? Kind of like web pages that suck, but in Flash.
I don't have any off the top of my head. And in fact, one of the things that is sometimes we're at, we give talks and people are like, show us some bad Flash and why it's bad. And sometimes, you know, we have some sites, but it kind of feels uncomfortable because we're kind of like saying, oh, you know, like, these are the people who are making sites that may not be the best designed site for the user are actually the kind of people, you know, we want them to buy the book and say, look, you know, you can learn a few things from it.
That's
but
true.
Essentially, the Flash sites that are out there that, you know, we would consider, you know, the bad Flash website are, you know, they all have a few things in common. And it's kind of breaking down those little walls so that you can, you know, you can realize, okay, well, you know, we mentioned one already, like intros, long intros are an issue. And I think any website with a really long intro is probably something that we need to look at and fix, right? Download times. I've seen tons of Flash websites that you just have to wait. Like last night I was at a website, I literally had to wait 15 minutes for this huge Flash thing to download, and then it wasn't really as exciting as I thought it was going to be. And I think Flash, you know, it has the ability to stream, and it's had it for ages, and no one seems to use it. So that's like another, you know, another little notch. Say, okay, well, that equals bad website. And there's a lot of little things like that that I think, you know, a lot of websites have different aspects of these things, but I don't know. I don't know any I could give you right now that would, like, encompass the total bad Flash website.
And I think another thing we're really trying to do is, you know, the Flash community's had been beaten down pretty badly over the past couple of years from usability people, and it's, I don't know, we try and keep a more positive outlook and look for the ways to make things better as opposed to looking for what's bad out there. So I'm not sure we'll ever go off on a big tangent on just listing bad websites. It's, you know, I think there's enough people doing that out there. But, we probably don't need to be adding fuel to the fire, so it's something. We've had actually discussions about it, and kind of avoiding that part of the industry.
Both Duncan McAllister and Michelangelo Capraro are joining us for a conversation. Both authors of a new book that just came out called Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability and Interface Design.
The proper use of Flash has been a hotly debated topic between rich media evangelists and usability experts. The book site is at www.skip-intro.org.
More in a second. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
I'm interested in upgrading my 28.8 kilobaud internet connection to a 1.5 megabit fiber optic T1 line. Will you be able to provide an IP router that's compatible with my token ring Ethernet LAN configuration?
Can I have some money now?
Get your .com drama right here, right now on the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show.
This is the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana is here.
And we're in the middle of a guided tour on how to make good Flash with the authors of Skip Intro, Michelangelo Capraro, and Duncan McAllister.
Well, now, why do you think that the usability people have been so hard on the Flash technology? It seems like it's a design aspect, and most of the usability folks are focused on HTML designs, probably. But you know, there's some elements of Flash that you can deploy that you can't do with HTML. Can you guys run through a few of the techniques out there that you're seeing successful results on in design, like navigational designs in concept that are working well in Flash but are new to regular websites?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the one of the biggest ones that we're both a huge fan of is the fact that Flash is a single page metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if you're on an HTML site, every time you go to a new page, you know, it's literally a new page. You have to, your screen blanks out for a brief second, and then it renders in the new information.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Cooper actually spoke about this in one of his articles, saying that, you know, that creates this sort of exploratory nature of the web, where you're kind of exploring and trying to find things, and they're getting painted in front of you. It's like entering a new room in a video game almost, and you kind of have to orient yourself for a brief second to see mm-hmm. where you're at. Whereas Flash, you've got this thing where you can have an interface up the entire time and then load content into that interface without ever going to a new page. So it offers this much more seamless, sort of comfortable interface for the users. And you really can't do that with HTML at all. So that's probably one of my favorite at the moment, is really pushing that aspect of Flash.
Duncan's dead on. That's definitely one of the top things, is being able to make this kind of dynamic, fluid, continuous experience for whatever, you know, you happen to be designing for on the web. And web pages, they're just not there yet where you can have that level of experience for the user. There are a lot of details that you can also work out with Flash that are just a little more difficult, you know, like if you are downloading information, you know, you can do some nice calculations that make the user feel like stuff is happening all the time. You know, you may even be waiting for something, but stuff is moving. You know, there's not just a big white square in front of you. And I think that kind of, you know, keeping the user aware of the situation, keeping them in a fluid environment, yeah, I think that's where Flash really excels. Mm-hmm. We're also starting to see Flash kind of move into some new areas, you know, as we start seeing it move on to, like, little devices, you know, like handheld devices, television. I think that starts to kind of add to the experience the user can have mm-hmm. As that starts to transfer back to the web.
Yeah, I don't know if they use Flash exactly or not on broadcast TV, but I do see the news at 6. They're trying to make it look like Flash, you know. It's a lot of webification going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
definitely a lot of that kind of stuff. And as we start to see fuller, bigger things like video and stuff happening on the web and integrating that with the interaction that you can do with Flash, I mean, suddenly we're really going to start diverging from the regular click and wait web page to this totally new kind of world, you know. The stuff that we would have thought we would be doing in the year 2002, but, you know, like 20 years ago,
yeah.
But we're still not there, but we are. You know, we just have to think in that way.
Would it be safe to say that one of the things that have held Flash back a little bit as far as people using it is the perception that it's a broadband solution? Would you guys say that that's a true statement about most Flash implementations that are out there, is that it requires a lot of bandwidth to use?
I think currently, yes. I think there's a lot of people out there who are putting together sites that are unfortunately too large, because Flash is this sort of unlimited tool where you can do whatever you want, and so people do whatever they want.
yeah, they go too far sometimes.
Exactly,
yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility type thing, and there's not that much responsibility out there.
It's
quite
Spider-Man.
Yet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm such a geeky comic book fan. But it's very easy to create a really compelling Flash site that's, you know, hugely interactive and you know, fantastically designed, and have it stream to the extent that no one would ever know that it was, you know, a Flash website. You know, I built sites in the past, and they take a longer than they would just throwing something together. But you can build a site very easily that entertains the user, and their, you know, files are 20 and 30K and no more than that, and it's something that just couldn't be done in HTML. So it's absolutely possible. It's just a little bit more education out there for developers, I think.
Mm-hmm. Certainly as deployment of broadband increases, there's probably a bigger place in the world for Flash, I guess. It's kind of the bigger message there.
Like Duncan was saying, when you start developing in Flash and see all the stuff it can do, you want to make big things.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, when Flash was introduced, it was designed to make really small things. I mean, the graphics are vector graphics, so they don't take up a lot of space in the file, and they don't take a lot of time to download. Duncan and I just finished working on a little project, and actually we're going to put pieces of it as part of our website where, you know, we built a whole site. It actually can be an unlimited amount of pages, and it's like 30 or 40K.
Wow.
And it just takes information from the server on the back end and just generates new information, but it never grows bigger than that, and you never have to download another page. So, I mean, that's competing with real tight HTML, you know, and you can do that kind of stuff in Flash. It's just developers need to be aware that they can do that.
We're taking a quick break, but we're having a conversation with Michelangelo Capraro and Duncan McAllister. They're the authors of a new book called The Skip Intro. More in a second. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
You're still connected to the Web Talk Guys Radio Show. I'm Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana's here. We're having a conversation with Michelangelo Capraro and Duncan McAllister, both Flash usability developers and authors of a new book called Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability and Interface Design. You raised a great comment there about the dynamic content within Flash. How is the Flash generator program doing out there? And are there other versions of that out there that a person could tap into that may be a little bit more cost effective? Or do you guys have any comments about Flash generator?
I think generator's actually dead now. They canceled generator, and they're bringing out a new server product because Flash MX mimics so many of the features that generator had in and of itself. It's pretty exciting, some of the stuff that MX can do without that server product at all. I mean, just the way it can dynamically load JPEGs, for instance, and its XML rendering engine is mind-blowingly faster than Flash 5. It's at the point where it's actually a usable asset to the Flash environment now.
Generator was really... It did some really amazing things. I think one of the hard things was that you needed to have a server, and the testing of it and developing on it was a little bit awkward if you spent most of your time in Flash. There's a lot still, though. There's several open source versions of software that work just like Generator, and people still use them, and they're pretty interesting. You know, they generate Flash basically on the fly from data coming out of the server without someone actually needing to build a Flash file. It's pretty crazy.
Do you guys have a list of sites out there that you would recommend our listeners go check out that have good implementation of Flash?
I don't have any actually with me right now. We'll probably be posting them on the website when that
okay.
goes up.
I think a couple of the sites we go to have a lot of resources and links to good Flash and keep an eye out for good Flash. But we go to, like, wearehere.com is a really good resource for finding good Flash. There's a couple. FlashKit is another one.
I like FlashKit.
Yeah, there's some really good ones, and Flash developers have formed kind of this great little community, you know. It's like, they're a tight bunch. So you go to any of these websites, or you're on any of the mailing lists, and if there's some good stuff out there, it gets passed around and you find out about it. So it's really cool.
Duncan, Michelangelo, why don't you tell us some projects that you're working on right now, and then also tell us all the websites that you're creating right now. I know you mentioned skip-intro.org. So why don't you tell us what you're working on right now?
Duncan, you're working on exciting stuff.
Oh, okay. I'm actually working with Michelangelo's old company, Creative Engine. In Flash MX, we're building a online scheduling application for Ted Kennedy's office.
Oh, wow. That sounds terrific.
Yeah, it's really cool. We're calling this Hell Week, so we're trying to really finish up the beta version of it this week.
So that would just be like an intranet for their office, that kind of thing?
I guess all senators have a person who gets scheduling requests and then basically either, you know,
speeches,
yes or no.
Yeah,
sort of
all
yes
sorts
or
of
no,
stuff.
And then they put it into the schedule. And they've kind of been doing it manually up until this point. And so we've gone in with, currently it's sitting on a Lotus Notes database backend. We wrote a custom Java server to transmit that information from Lotus Notes into XML. Then it goes into XML, into Flash, and Flash sort of renders it out. And we've got, you know, draggable time blocks and stretchable time blocks, all sorts of fun stuff going on in there.
So you're creating something new, actually.
Yeah, this is, it's actually, I mean, it is, it's sort of like an Outlook Express, but or an Outlook, I guess, but it's online, accessible from any web browser that can support the Flash MX plugin. From anywhere around the world, so it's a really, you know, it's a great little demonstration of what Flash MX can do, because it's literally, it's either at this point either doing it in Flash MX or Java, because you couldn't do it in HTML, it would just be impossible.
Would you say that that's a Flash application almost?
Absolutely. 100% a Flash application. Like, so we're hopefully going to be finishing it up at the end of this week and maybe posting a beta online. So we can maybe come back on the show at some point and give you guys a tour of that.
And where can we see some more of your work?
I have my own company called Breathe Design. It's BREATHEDesign.com.
And then Michelangelo, is that Hotbot?
Yes, Hotbot.com. And when Duncan and I started writing the book, we just kind of had to temporarily abandon a lot of our personal projects. But Hotbot.com will receive an update very, very soon. It's in need of some love.
Well, you guys have quite a portfolio, having worked, you know, back in the 90s on Ally McBeal and for Burger King and Fox and Disney, just quite an amazing array of work. So much success. Continued with the good sales of the book are on the verge, I know. It just came out in April. And
thank you. Thank
you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Guys, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us. We've been speaking with Michelangelo Caprero and Duncan McAllister, both Flash usability developers and authors of a new book, Skip Intro, Macromedia Flash Usability and Interface Design.
And up next, we're talking website server co-location with Rick Shanaman, CEO of Optic Fusion. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio.
Come on.
Hey, do you love the internet and media? Are you interested in implementing streaming media into your business? Or maybe you just want to create your own entertainment empire? Well, the WebTalk guys are offering a one-day hands-on workshop covering everything about streaming audio and video and how you can encode using real audio and video, Windows Media, and MP3. You'll learn all the steps from concept to production to the final webcast, and you can turn it all into your own radio show or a way to market your expertise on the internet or take your business online. This one-day workshop on streaming media production is Tuesday, January 14, from 9 to 4. The workshop is held at the Tacoma Community College's Downtown Center in Tacoma, Washington. You can get more information right at our WebTalkEyes website at webtalkeyes.com/workshop. And keep this in mind, two more one-day workshops from the WebTalkEyes are coming up very soon. We're going to be teaching a website usability techniques workshop on February 11 and a website marketing and promotions one-day workshop on March 18. Remember, more information at webtalkeyes.com/workshop. We'd love to meet you and see you there.
You're listening to WebTalkEyes Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee. And if you ever plan on owning a website, you're going to have it hosted somewhere. Today, we're jumping into the world of website hosting and all its variations, and joining us is Rick Shanaman, and he is the CEO of OpticFusion.net, and they are a carrier-neutral colocation facility. That just means that if you're an internet service provider, you can plug into them, can host your server on their network from any carrier out there. Rick, thanks for coming on the show with me.
Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about OpticFusion and what makes your services kind of different in the marketplace?
Well, OpticFusion is a full-service colocation data center. So we man our facility 24 hours a day, so whenever you call on the phone, you always get a person. Whether you come down here day or night or need assistance with anything in the colocation field, we've got someone here who can help you. And what we've kind of taken a different approach to the colocation field, which has colocation connectivity beat up pretty severely here in the last year.
Yeah, it has.
But when we started this company a little over 2 years ago, we decided to look at a different kind of model than one that was out there. And what we decided to do was provide a more of a boutique-type shop approach and specialize in listening to our customers and designing a program that works for their needs. We've got all kinds of customers in here from the 1U, 2U folks who just say, hey, I need a fractional T1 connectivity and basically need to be left alone. And if there's any resets or anything that needs to be done, I can come do them myself. And they're strictly looking for price. We also have a number of customers who require more services, who require either a tape backup, tape rotation, or swapping of cards or something along those lines, and we provide all those services too.
So you're offering kind of the full range of options. A person can manage their own server there, or they can have you guys do that?
Absolutely. We've even got a shared server that we have a number of websites on and a mail server that we run for folks. Companies who say, you know, we just want to outsource it all to one person who knows what they're doing. We don't want to have an IT person on staff, so we rely on you guys to just keep our website up and our mail server running. And if we've got a problem with either with our computer
or a connection, we just prefer to call you guys and have you bill us hourly. So we do that, as well as we've got full-on suites and cabinets of folks that are more into the ISP, ASP end, as well as we've got some companies locally that run on point-to-point connections over the city's $100 million fiber network, sure. Click network.
Do you see more companies, even smaller companies, getting their own little servers, their own little 2U or 1U server to operate their own websites? Do you see the industry kind of moving in that direction?
Boy, I think it's still the same as it always has been, which is when you reach kind of a critical mass point where you're getting a lot of transactions or a lot of business across your website, then you need to make that step from a shared server or a leased server onto something that you own. You know, a lot of people have equipment, servers that they're familiar with, so that's what they want to use, and therefore they want to use their own equipment.
Yeah, is software an issue for you guys? Some people want to run Linux. Some people want to run different types of databases. How do you guys support that?
We don't ever touch your information. It's more like a hotel or a U-Rent storage place. You know, you can bring down whatever you want to, and whether it's, boxes of hammers or containers holding basketballs, we don't care. We just put it in that space. And that's the same way as kind of what we do with the servers. Most of the stuff that we do for folks is a simple, you need to reset something, so we push the button and reset it. We do have some troubleshooting assistance that we'll offer for folks if they require that on the database end. But typically, we don't touch your data. We don't touch your connection. We just make sure that you've got plenty of power coming to your location, that you're up all the time, that the generator's working, and that there's security and staff here to handle any of those physical problems.
So have you seen the bandwidth fees dropping over the last year or so, and do you see that low-level cost continuing over the next couple of years?
I've seen the price drop as the folks have become more competitive to look for customers. But we've had a number of these people who provide the connectivity.
Yeah.
They've gone out of business. The lack of competition in the market has really stopped that. In fact, I was reading an article the other day that said that we've seen the bottom of the bandwidth pricing. Now we're going to see start.
It's going to go back up again?
Yeah, because, you know, even though we've got lots of fiber running around, so much of it is non-lit. There's no more being added. So we've got lots of capacity now, but you got to remember, everybody's locked into these long-term deals. So as we keep adding more people and more capacity, we're not taking a lot of companies out of that pipeline. So we're going to see down the road probably another scenario of where we're going to see prices rise because it's just difficult to get connectivity. You know, everybody wants to have more phone lines and more data lines and all that. I think we've seen the prices bottom out. I don't think we'll see them drop much further. We may see some fire sales. But if you notice, the fire sales that we've seen have been from companies that have been announced that they're no longer going to be around.
We're speaking with Rick Shanaman, who's CEO of OpticFusion.net. More with Rick in a moment. This is Web.Guys Radio.
Grab a board and surf the web with those crazy Web Talk guys right here, right now.
You're listening to Web Talk Guys Radio, and we're speaking with Rick Shanaman, who's the CEO of OpticFusion.net. So are most of your fiber connections wired up through the Westin Hotel up in Seattle, which is the major point up there?
The Westin building, everybody's fighting to get back to that spot. We, as well as everybody else in the market, want to have as much availability as we can there. And we work closely with the folks at the Westin to develop diversity and develop pathways with the customers that are there.
Do you see any other types of direct connections being made from your facility there to maybe other major hubs there on across the internet, like maybe San Francisco or Portland or anything like that?
Yeah, we've worked on a scenario where we would reach out and run down through Olympia to Portland. You've got to build a business case for any kind of build-out or work that you do these days. I mean, that's the prudent way to do it. So you've got to look at those cases and where those customers are. We have inquired about that. We've got numbers. We've got specs. We know how to do it. What we need to do is just put together the business case and come up with the customers that say, now's the time to do this, and we need the price on it, and then go. And, of course, you know, this business is funny because the more you buy, the cheaper it gets.
Yeah, that's right. What are some of the core issues that you're seeing as you're talking to customers out there that people are concerned about when it comes to website hosting, and how are you guys addressing those?
We have the one division that does website hosting. Then we have just straight co-location in our facility. What we try to do with our website hosting is maintain that lower-end product. $25 to $100 a month hosting product, because we don't want to compete with the folks that are in our co-location that are running maybe a dedicated server or stuff like that. What's happening right now in the market seems to be we've got a lot of folks that are planning for down the road, and I think we're going to see kind of an echo boom. Of course, we saw a huge boom of anybody with a business plan on a napkin could get millions of dollars in funding and never have to worry about turning a profit. Those days are over, but I think we've still got a lot of great business ideas and plans out there that are starting to get funded again, and that these are the guys who are serious. So what we're seeing is a lot of people who say scalability is what we want to do. We want to start off small. We don't need to rent 2,000 square feet of co-location space and put one server in it. What we want to do is take a half cabinet, and then we want the ability to expand that into a cabinet, and we want the ability to expand that into three cabinets and take on as they grow. So that's what we're seeing is how do we develop products not only inside our own company, but also with carriers to be able to take a T1 and turn it up to a DS3 and so on. So it's on demand more than, gee, buy everything you need for the possible growth that you're going to have in 5 years. Those days are over. Now everything's going to be very manageable and scalable.
You bet. Now, didn't you guys just acquire a web development company?
We've been working with a company called Dynamics Design. They've been around for 4 or 5 years building websites. They specialize in the dentistry field, building websites for dentists. We've been working with them on a lot of other projects, and it just was a good time to kind of join forces and kind of bring everything into. It was a area that we had always been, referring business to them when somebody kind of came looking for a website. Sure. We'd send it their way. And they'd been sending us stuff, too. And we thought, gee, why don't we just, cut out the swapping of checks at the end of the month and put everything under one banner. And so we did that.
Certainly makes sense to offer kind of a complete solution. I'm sure there's clients that you run into that are looking for a development company. And if they've got a close relationship with you, it's, it works out terrific for the client.
Yeah. Yeah, it's working out really well. We've got a couple of programmers here on staff, and they specialize in the lower end. So they'll do, updates for, $25, $50, all the way up to the full, $5,000-$6,000 huge interactive e-commerce sites. They specialize in just, the kind of the mom-pop businesses, so to speak, providing them all the services so they can have their email, they can have their website, they can have their, search engine registrations.
Yeah.
They can get an update a month, and they always know they can get somebody on the phone for tech support. So it works out very well.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of unique in this the space of co-location facilities. Most of them just do that. They don't get involved in the content piece.
Yeah, we try to keep it split up a lot. We try to keep it as a separate, business. We try to do whatever we can to help our customers out. If they need a point-to-point connection internally in the city and it doesn't even involve our co-location center, we are more than happy to help them achieve that at a very highly competitive price.
Now, how would a person get in contact with you if they were interested in having a server co-located there and finding out more about your services?
Really easy to get a hold of us. We're at opticfusion.net. Because we deal with networks, so we're at opticfusion.net. And my email is rick@opticfusion.net. Or you can also just give me a call at 253-274-1726.
Terrific. Rick, thanks for joining us on the show. It was great hearing about Optic Fusion. We've been speaking with Rick Shanaman, who's the CEO of opticfusion.net. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, my name is Rob Greenlee, and we hope to have you back with us again next week. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.